Case number 13-1014, Sierra Club et al. Petitioners versus Environmental Protection Agency and Gina McCarthy, Administrator, United States Environmental Protection Agency. Mrs. Smar for the petitioners, Mr. Ray for the respondents, and Mr. Fitchthorn for the intervener.
May it please the court.
Let's make sure the courtroom's clear. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Thomas Smar. I'm appearing on behalf of petitioners Sierra Club, National Parks Conservation Association, and Natural Resources Defense Council. Your Honors, last week the U.S. Supreme Court held in its 6-2 decision that EPA acted within its authority in issuing the Cross-State Air Pollution Rule, or CASPER, and remanded that case, EME, Homer City Generation versus EPA, back to this court for further proceedings. But that case does not control the case that's before the court today, because despite EPA's clear victory before the Supreme Court, in this case, EPA is still taking the position that it may use the Clean Air Interstate Rule, or CAIR, to ensure permanent and enforceable air quality improvements through the approval of state plans that the Clean Air Act requires to ensure air quality for many years into the future.
Well, suppose EPA counsel tells us that given the Supreme Court's decision, it's not going to use CARE anymore.
Your Honor, if EPA...
Is this case moot then?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
You can tell us that it's moot, right?
Yes, it is. But we still have a live case here today, Your Honor, because EPA has not yet taken that position.
No, but if that's what they tell us, can you imagine any circumstances under which they could continue to use CARE?
Your Honor, if it is our understanding, we certainly believe that EPA's approach in CASPER was strongly ratified last week by the Supreme Court, and my clients supported that decision.
But under the McCarthy memorandum, now that it's been vacated, and CARE was only in place under the McCarthy memorandum until the court acted. True, EPA hasn't acted yet, but can you imagine any circumstances under which EPA could lawfully use CARE now? I mean, suppose tomorrow it decided to approve a plan based on CARE. Wouldn't you challenge that?
We certainly would, Your Honor, and we think for this, the Supreme Court's decision only underscores why any further reliance on CARE is misguided.
I'm just trying to make sure you understand. My question is, if EPA counsel tells us that the agency isn't going to use CARE anymore, do you agree then that this case is moot?
I do, Your Honor.
Okay.
But it's our understanding, and the reason why we're still here today is it's our understanding that EPA has taken the position that CASPER is not yet in effect, and that in light of the Supreme Court's remand and potential for further proceedings before this court on remand, that EPA believes that there's still too much uncertainty with regard to the future of CASPER for EPA to take that position in this case at this time. And so that's why we are still here today. And in our opinion, though, Your Honors, the Supreme Court's decision makes clear that when EPA wants to, it has the authority to move forward with air quality improvements and to lock them in state plans in a way that is permanent and enforceable, as the statute requires, as the Clean Air Act requires.
Well, let me ask you a question about this. Let's assume for a minute it's not moot, and pick up on what you're just saying and ask you a quick question about the agency's argument that your organizations lack standing. They say, EPA says in its brief, quote, petitioners suffer no current injury because the areas it could be redesignated based on the memorandum are currently achieving the NAAQS. The petitioners presented no reason to suggest that significant and future changes in the availability of restrictions are likely to occur. So what's your answer to that? Sounds to me like I didn't see a response to that in your reply.
We have both substantive and procedural harm to our members in this case.
Let's not talk about procedural. Let's talk about substantive.
Sure, Your Honor. The harm is that you can kind of think of the Clean Air Act's requirement here that state plans lock in air quality improvements on a permanent enforceable basis as an insurance policy. And Congress has made the decision in putting those terms into the statute to guarantee that that once these air quality improvements are achieved and as these state plans are approved, that EPA is required to only approve these state plans if they are, in fact, locking in these air quality improvements on a permanent and enforceable basis.
But your injury depends on the EPA allowing reductions later, correct? Because they're complying with the NAAQS, aren't they? The areas that are approved are in compliance with the appropriate NAAQ. So your argument is that because it doesn't satisfy the permanent standard, that they might come out of compliance in the future. That's your argument, right?
Yes, Your Honor, because EPA is approving these plans based on care, which at the time of the approval they know is a temporary and illegal program.
But our case law requires that you show a substantial probability that harm will occur. It has to be, for you to be able to rely on future injury, it has to be substantially likely. And where do you make that argument? That it's substantially likely that without the permanent requirement, that these areas will come out of compliance?
Well, Your Honor, we have put forward standing declarants who are in areas where these policies are being approved under the illegal and temporary rule of care, and we also have the procedural harm claim, as you noted, that...
you noted it. I said I didn't want to talk about it. We'll get to procedural harm. I just don't see where you... I mean, I understand. I read your affidavits. They're definitely for people who live in these areas, no question about it. But I haven't seen anything which says the harm you believe will occur is, quote, substantially likely to. That's what I
Well, Your Honor, at this point, within the absence of any record created by EPA as to a case-by-case analysis of what is going to happen in these areas, we're in a situation where there's uncertainty and our members are at an increased risk. It's the risk that the substantially likely, the harm that's happening now is the fact that all that's in place is a temporary program. All that's in place is a program that this court 6 years ago found to be fundamentally flawed and needed to be replaced with something different, something that would necessarily require different emission reductions to occur in different places. Mm-hmm. And in the absence of that guarantee that the Clean Air Act requires, all we have is this uncertainty and this increased risk to our members that if care goes away, we have no certainty as to whether anything will replace it that will in fact lock in these air quality improvements over time. We know that care is going away. We know that it is not, this court has ordered EPA to replace care as expeditiously as possible. And the problem with EPA's memorandum and the policy that it ushered in is that EPA is applying this policy on a national basis with the blanket assumption that all of these care emission reductions will necessarily carry forward in all locations, when in fact we know that care is going away and that there is going to be something different that will replace it. There's simply no reasoned explanation for EPA continuing with this policy of reliance on care in the absence of any kind of rulemaking or fact-finding that shows that in the specific areas where they're relying on it, the emission reductions are in fact permanent and enforceable.
It's very difficult to figure out what kind of opinion the court would write to give you the relief you're seeking, other than, follow the statute.
That is the relief that we are seeking here, Your Honor, is a vacatur of the memorandum.
No, but what you don't have in any of the affidavits, for example, is something like this, that under CARE, which will be in effect for this 10-year period for certain areas, I was trying to think of this myself, an industry would only need to employ technology that would last for 3 years, whereas if there were a permanent rule, the technology would have to last for 10 years. So you could argue, well, under care, since it was temporary, industry only put in the 3-year scrubbers, not the 10-year scrubbers, for example. But there's nothing like that in these affidavits. These are just people who want clean air. It'll help them breathe better. Isn't that right?
At the root of this harm, though, Your Honor, is the memorandum, because it has directed, it's a reversal, of course, from EPA's prior position.
No, but I'm just talking about the standing issue now that I thought Judge Tatel was exploring with you. I mean, EPA says you can attack these regional approvals, on a case-by-case basis. So you will have a chance to make your arguments, but we're before that now.
But the crux of the causation here, Your Honor, is the fact that the memorandum reversed EPA's legal position on the status of care. But prior to...
And you can attack that down the road, says EPA.
But
if you did timely at this point, yeah.
But, Your Honor, neither EPA nor interveners disputes that EPA is, in fact, implementing this as a national policy. This is what they're doing. They're relying on care across the country.
I know, but absent something like what I've just suggested, I mean, these areas are in compliance with the national ambient air quality standards, right? You admit that.
That's true, Your Honor. At present, they are in compliance.
And that's all the statute requires.
And they're also, in this case, there are also the affiants who use national parks, who are relying on EPA's implementation of the regional haze program to improve progressively over time visibility in those national parks, and approval of these state plans under care, which is a temporary program. It does not provide that guarantee that Congress sought to require EPA to provide. That
and the affidavits also don't tell me that under what you call CASPER, air would get better.
Well, Your Honor, CASPER is not at issue in this case.
No, I know, but you're saying you want a guarantee, and if you have to show there's a substantial probability. You haven't even posited that what EPA is proposing as a permanent solution is worse than what is the temporary solution. I mean, that's why I say it's very difficult to figure out how to write an opinion given these affidavits.
Well, there's also the procedural harm here, Your Honor, which is that EPA implemented this policy without notice and comment, and the policy is a reversal of EPA's prior legal position on care. And if this court were to rule purely on procedural grounds, that would redress that injury, because we would have the opportunity to make our case to EPA that any further reliance on care in the absence of a case-by-case.
What's your response to the cases that EPA cites to the proposition that for notice and comment claims that the absence of notice and comment is not sufficient to convey Article III standing, that you need some other injury to allow you to challenge the failure to comply with the notice and comment requirement?
Well, again, Your Honor,
they cite a whole series of cases, and again, you didn't respond to them in your brief.
Again, Your Honor, the risk here is the increased risk.
Now you're going back to the... let's assume I don't think that's sufficient, that the increased risk isn't sufficient. You yourself said you have two bases for standing. That was one of them. And then you said you have procedural standing. And I was asking how that survives in view of the cases that the agency cites. That was my question.
The harm here to our members is the concrete and present interest they have in air quality guarantees that are lasting.
So it's not procedural. Is that your point? Have you given up on that?
No, Your Honor. The procedural element of the harm is the failure of EPA to take notice and comment on. If the court has no further questions, I reserve the balance of my time.
All right. Mr. Rave?
Good morning, Your Honors. Norman Ray from the Department of Justice, representing EPA. The council table is Reagan Tate from EPA's Office of General Counsel. To address the issue of mootness, I wish I could stand up here and tell you that we definitively believe that as of today the case is moot. We think it probably is moot. We think it may well become moot in the very near future. Unfortunately, the facts are just in flux. Although the specific factual circumstance that the memo addressed, which is that the court in Yimmy Homer had vacated the transport rule and had instructed EPA to continue to implement CARE, no longer exists.
Are there any circumstances under which the agency would use CARE now?
Let me just answer that by assuming one of the sort of factual uncertainties here is that there are issues in the EME Homer case that the panel did not address.
Okay, I understand that. That relates to how you implement the cross-state rule, right?
Well, that will depend on what the panel decides. What panel?
This one?
No, Your Honor. The case has been remanded back to the EME Homer panel.
My precise question is this. You're right. The agency has to figure out what to do as a result of the Supreme Court case, and there's this panel. The panel in that case has to act, right? My question is, are there any circumstances under which the agency would use CARE in the interim? In other words, given our first decision in this case, invalidating CARE, and given the Supreme Court's decision sustaining the cross-state rule, and given the McCarthy memorandum statement that that'll only be in place until the latter issue is resolved, can you give me a circumstance under which the agency would rely on CARE in the meantime?
The one I can think of is if the panel, on the basis of the remaining issues, were to again vacate the transport rule and again instruct EPA to continue to implement CARE, which is possible. But even then, the agency would not necessarily rely on this memorandum. It would have to then evaluate what that panel held. It would have to evaluate its own time frame for replacement.
So what happens then between the time of the remand panel decision and now?
I'm sorry.
In other words, you're saying that, there are these undecided issues and that hypothetically it's not impossible that on remand the agency would vacate the transport rule.
The court, excuse me. Yes.
So what happens between today and...
ultimate decision?
Yeah.
That's an issue that's going to have to be addressed on a case-by-case basis, Your Honor. The agency would have to evaluate.
So I understood that some of these requests may be in the pipeline and that regional directors may have them under consideration or about to issue an opinion or something like that.
Well, I'm not aware that there are any
position. Go ahead. Sorry.
But the agency, I think, will...
But you've got counsel sitting there. Why don't we... Are there pending applications that the agency is likely to grant? I mean, is anything going on right now?
There are pending SIPs.
But any pending SIPs that are close to...
Well, the agency has a two-year deadline under the Act to act.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Part of the reason we have to move. We can't just stop and wait for this process. The agency has statutory obligations. Is the reason it had to address the issue in the first place. Yeah. The agency is obligated to act on SIP submissions, it's obligated to act on redesignations, and it had to figure out what the status of CARE was once the decision in Yimmy Homer was issued, once the transport rule was vacated. In the meantime, I think to the extent it can, it will probably see if the situation clarifies itself. And at this point, we don't even know how the remand panel is going to proceed, whether it's going to require a briefing or on what sort of time frame there is. There's essentially a lot of uncertainty. And the agency, you know, once it has a better feel for the facts, it will have to take another look at this issue. So it's not going to be relying on this, the memorandum per se, but it could conceivably, depending on how the facts shake out, ultimately decide that in a certain, in a particular circumstance, it may have, may be appropriate to rely on CARE in making a decision that it's required to make. So I think
it all
the
seems
case is
so kind of Orwellian. I mean, you're operating under a provision that this court has invalidated, and the Supreme Court has held that the alternative is okay, and yet the agencies could, there's a possibility they'll still operate under the old version. That just,
well, it's okay,
I mean, I understand
subject
what you're saying.
To addressing the outstanding issues.
Right. I mean, I unfortunately, it's not really accurate to say the Supreme Court said it was okay. The Supreme Court said on the two issues that the panel had decided it was okay, but there are still a number of issues involving modeling and notice and comment and various other issues. And so, you know, it's a very awkward position to be in, Your Honor, no question about it. And one, the agency is really going to have to figure out as it moves forward. It's not, you know, it's not certainly not going to be the case that, you know, they're going to say, oh, we have this memo, we're automatically going to implement CARE. They will have to.
But a new memo will have to be issued, won't it? That's what I'm trying.
Well, they're, eventually the agency will either decide, you know, this memo is simply moot and it's going to just proceed case by case or issue something. But I
think that phrase, until the court resolves.
Right, until all further proceedings.
Yeah.
You can interpret.
All right.
I think it was really intended to envision getting to this point, but I think it, without thinking through that there might in fact be further proceedings.
Okay, but you're telling us that that it's possible that there are applications pending that may require, because of the 2-year requirement, may require approval under CARE before EPA is able to sort out, the remand panel and EPA are able to sort out the consequences of what the Supreme Court did, right?
It's certainly
possible.
That's what
you're telling us.
I think it's theoretically possible. I mean, it's only been a week since the decision came out.
Theoretically, it's a little different now.
It is possible.
If it's theoretically possible, the case may be moot.
Right.
I mean, but
it's possible. It is certainly possible. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's terribly likely, but it's certainly possible.
Well, suppose we knew that there were, in fact, no applications pending.
Then the case might. I mean,
well,
first of all,
can you ask EPA counsel sitting right there? Why don't you ask her?
There are pending decisions.
Okay.
So the agency could, in theory, have to act. But as you pointed out earlier, though, these decisions are all made on a case by case basis. They are done through notice and comment, and there is independent opportunity for judicial review. And it's in that process that this decision will be made. It's not going to be made on any sort of blanket basis. I mean, in terms of, you know, the case is moot if you accept the petitioner's premise that EPA has established a sort of policy of using CARE. If you essentially look, though, at what we believe the memorandum actually was, which is EPA's analysis and legal analysis of what the world looked like after the decision of EME Homer and how the agency was going to proceed given its obligations to move forward, then I think, you know, the case is more arguably moot because we're not going to be, the memo itself, the factual situation no longer exists, although in theory it could come back to life. But, you know, we never believed there was a live controversy or case here in the first place, partly because of standing, I think for the reasons that have already been discussed, and as you pointed out, these are done case by case. There can be judicial review. Interestingly enough, the two cases specifically for redesignations that petitioners rely on, Chicago and Atlanta, they did not see. Those have been finalized, and they did not file petitions for review in those cases, which further raises the issue of whether they have any substantive injury. Clearly, they, you know, what they really are arguing now is a follow-the-law sort of injury, which in Supreme Court has certainly repeatedly said.
But they're challenging the McCarthy memo, right? That's what they're challenging here.
They're challenging the memo, yes.
Yeah, and, I mean, doesn't seem to me to be an answer to that, that they, that their ability to bring that, that they're free to challenge individual decisions. I don't understand why that affects their ability. I understand your argument about injury.
Right.
But I don't understand this part of the argument.
Well, I was saying that's an aspect of the reason they have no injuries, because they, those issues can be challenged on a case-by-case basis. And also, it goes more
but,
to whether
that's always true of a new regulation. You can always say when an agency issues a new regulation, no one has standing because you can always challenge it when it's applied to you.
That's actually not true under this Act, Your Honor, because a regulation under the judicial review provisions of the Clean Air Act, you can't challenge a regulation when it's applied to you, if you haven't been, at least the substance of the regulation. That's specifically barred by the judicial review provision.
Well, then, isn't that a pretty clear answer to this case?
Well, no, Your Honor, but that's assuming that this is a rule in the first place.
Oh, I see.
And the argument I'm really talking about here is what the nature of the memorandum is. Uh-huh. It's really, it was only intended to give public notice to the states and to the public as to how the agency was going to proceed with these issues, because they were getting a lot of questions about it. And the agency said, the court has ordered us to implement CARE. We have to move forward in making these decisions. We think that there's nothing that prohibits us from making these decisions. And it's important to realize, Your Honor, not only are these areas already in attainment, and not only have they not raised any substantive claim that there's a problem with the regional haze plan, but this determination is only one small part of the analysis of whether an area should be redesignated. I mean, the statute doesn't say every regulation you rely on in doing a redesignation, and the permanent language only applies to redesignations, has to be permanent or has to be in effect forever. The actual statutory language is much broader. It looks at the totality of the regulatory program, and this is 7407D3E3, and the actual language is, the administrator determines that the improvement in air quality is due to permanent and enforceable reductions in emissions resulting from implementation of the applicable implementation plan and applicable federal air pollutant control regulations and other permanent enforceable reductions. So it's looking at the air quality control program as a whole, plus there are the other requirements for doing redesignation look to whether there is an approved SIP in place, whether there is a maintenance plan.
Sure, but this is a big, big part of it.
No, it's not really.
You mean all this transport and care litigation is just about minor part of this whole program, and it really doesn't matter?
Well, no, Your Honor. The part is that the care was a significant part in achieving the reductions that have resulted in these areas becoming. But all I'm saying is, we are now in a situation where an area has attained. And the question is, are they now going to continue to be regulated as a non-attainment area,
yeah,
or can they move into this regime of being regulated as an attainment area? So what you look at is, how did we get here? What are the reductions? And are they part of a regulatory program, as opposed to, for instance, a few years of good weather,
sure,
or an economic downturn?
And no, then, I understand that, but you heard
then,
my questions to
right,
count.
If I, can, I think I answered
sorry.
If I can
okay.
just finish. And then you say, okay, now what's going to be in place moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is the existing plan, but there also has to be what's called a maintenance plan.
Mm-hmm.
And a maintenance plan sets forth the regulations that are intended to keep the area in attainment.
Mm-hmm.
It includes contingency measures that go into effect if, you know, the reductions do increase, if there are issues. So there's an entire regulatory package involved here, Your Honor, that you look at as a whole to make the ultimate decision, which is, are there regulations in place that we think are sufficient to maintain attainment? And or was it sort of a weather fluke or a problem? And so this looking backwards element, see how did we get here, is that through regulations, is only one part of the analysis. And this whole analysis then is done through a notice and comment process. And all the memorandum says is that in doing this sort of looking backwards process, because CARE is going to be, we've been required to keep implementing CARE. We know CARE's at the time, of course, we knew CARE was going to be in place for a period of time and then ultimately replaced by something that will address the same issues. And given the agency's ongoing responsibilities to deal with these requests, it was a reasonable approach to the statute.
Mm-hmm.
Time's up. If you...
All
Court has further questions?
No. Mr. Thorne.
May it please the Court, my name is Norman Thickthorn, representing intervener respondents. With respect to standing, Your Honors, I think it's worth noting that we made the observation in our brief that there's a whole program in place under the Clean Air Act called the Prevention of Significant Deterioration Program that is specifically designed to ensure that air quality in attainment areas does not deteriorate. In fact, is designed to keep air quality even better than the National Ambient Air Quality Standards. Petitioners did not respond to that point in their reply brief. Also, with respect to standing, as the petitioners stated in their reply brief at pages 1 through 3, the McCarthy Memorandum, insofar as it addresses redesignation requests and attainment and maintenance plans, addresses requests and plans that relied on CASPER. But the petitioners, neither the petitioners' briefs nor their affidavits make any claim that they are actually harmed by any redesignations or SIPs that relied on CASPER. Their opening brief purports to identify one redesignation request for Kentucky in the Cincinnati area that they say is based on future emissions reductions under CASPER, but they don't attempt to allege any harm from the memorandum with respect to that particular redesignation. They don't allege it in their briefs or in the affidavits, nor could they because that redesignation occurred 11 months before the memorandum was issued. Also, as for regional haze, the memorandum addresses only one regional haze SIP. That is the regional haze SIP for Connecticut, and their affidavits and their briefs do not allege that their members are harmed as a result of reliance on care reductions for the Connecticut regional haze SIP. I would also note that they would have the opportunity to challenge any approval by EPA of the Connecticut regional haze SIP in the Second Circuit. Petitioners will have all the opportunities that they could want to present all of their arguments for each individual SIP or redesignation. Nothing is foreclosed by the memorandum. In fact, in the proceedings on the Atlanta redesignation and the proceedings on the Chicago redesignation, and I mentioned those two cities in particular because those are the cities mm-hmm. that their affidavits focus on, EPA had a full comment and notice and comment opportunity for the public. In the case of the Chicago proceeding, no adverse comments were submitted, even though EPA had made clear that it was relying on care reductions for the redesignation in part. No comments were submitted, and as far as we can tell, no petitions for review were filed in the Seventh Circuit on that matter. In the case of Atlanta, there were extensive comments filed, and EPA provided a detailed rationale justifying its decision that reliance on care reductions was appropriate, but again, no petition for review was filed as to that action. I mention this in part because any claim of procedural injury from inability to comment on EPA's decisions on this issue, I think, ring hollow. Even if petitioners had a cognizable injury, it could not be redressed by vacature of the memorandum. Their injury would be sustained as a result of EPA's actions on individual redesignations and SIP proceedings, and they have ample recourse before EPA and in the courts of appeals as to that matter. I would also note that the permanent and enforceable standard that they focus on in their briefs does not apply to regional haze proceedings. Regional haze SIPs must, of course, rely on enforceable emission reductions, but permanent does not apply. They don't identify any regulation or statutory provision that applies a permanent standard with respect to regional haze SIPs. And the care reductions are, of course, enforceable now, and they will continue to be enforceable into the future. The stay of CASPER that was issued by this court provides that care will remain in effect until the petitions for review have been resolved. And as we heard earlier, there are a number of issues that will be presented to this court on remand from the Supreme Court. So at the present time, CARE remains in effect.
All right, your time is up.
Thank you. Thank you.
Does Mr. Seymour have any time left? All right, why don't you take two?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple points in my time remaining. With regard to standing, the standing here is clearly on all fours with the other cases involving unpublished EPA memoranda that we cite in our brief, the 2011 NRDC versus EPA case, the Sierra Club v. EPA case from 2012. These are cases where there was an agency memoranda that instructed, with the NRDC case 2011, instructed EPA regions like the memorandum here to begin approving proposed state plans that would have previously been required to be rejected as unlawful. And
but in the NRDC case, the allegation there was that agency's memorandum actually delayed the emission reductions, whereas here you concede that these regions comply with the NAC.
But, Your Honor, again, the harm here is the removal of the insurance policy. The NAAQS provisions of the statute require that these emission reductions be permanent and enforceable. It sets a 10-year threshold for that. And
that was not the case in NRDC. See, in NRDC, there was an immediate harm. It wasn't a projected future harm.
But, it's the we are clear within the zone of harm to enforce the procedural safeguards of the statute. It's similar to the other cases that we cite in our brief, including Nyberg v. Whitman from the Second Circuit, and this Court's 1998 decision in the Animal Legal Defense Fund case, where there are statutory safeguards that are in place that are not being followed, and the result is direct harm to members of the organizations that were plaintiffs. With regard to the finality of the memo, clearly, we're not required to bring as-applied challenges in order to challenge this on its face. This court's jurisprudence on finality makes clear that it's the practical effect of the memorandum that matters, and prior to the memorandum's issuance, it would not have been lawful for EPA regions to make these decisions on a case-by-case basis. With regard to that case-by-case basis analysis, this memo actually precludes that sort of case-by-case decision-making because it directs the regions, it's marching orders to the regions to move forward with approval of these state plans based on CARE. Your Honors, if you have no further questions, we'll stand on our briefs.
Thank you.